Welcome. Today I'll be interviewing Momen Ahmad. Momen is in charge of marketing, media, advertising, and branding here at the NATO Association of Canada. He recently graduated with an honors BA from the Urban Studies program at the University of Toronto. An aspiring digital city maker, Momen is passionate about the macro and micro effects that global politics have on urban life, as well as the intersections between digital media and innovation strategies in cities. Momen is the mastermind of marketing, media, advertising, and branding here at the NATO Association of Canada. Thank you so much for joining us today, Momen.
Thank you for having me.
I would like to begin by asking you the following question. You are responsible for all of the marketing, digital media, and branding here at the NATO Association of Canada. Would you be able to discuss some of the work that you do?
Sure. I basically take care of everything from basic communications to digital media to social media to press releases. It's a little bit all-encompassing. An average day for me will be making marketing materials for an event, scheduling out some of the communications that we send out during the day through our multiple platforms. A lot of my work these days is preoccupied with doing analytical research into what segments of our published work do the best. And it basically varies depending on whether or not we're working at a conference or a roundtable at the time.
I find that analytics is crucial to the success of any program.
Absolutely.
It's an important component of any organization. What are your findings in terms of the success rate of some of the programs here at the NATO Association of Canada currently to date?
Well, I find that from a nonprofit that publishes heavily, we tend to do best analytics-wise when we tackle topics that are kind of ripped straight from the headlines, or we are doing things that are part of a series. For example, we are currently doing a series on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is part of an ongoing series, and when you're able to bunch a lot of articles together underneath a common platform, they tend to do better on analytics because people can track them and then go back to what sections they like. We also have a worldwide reach with regards to our website. So analytics are interesting in that way because we can see what content does best where.
You were also previously the social media coordinator at the Geography and Planning Department at the University of Toronto. This is where you first gained experience proposing and implementing social media strategies. What drew you to that role?
I was initially brought on as a research assistant by the chair of the Department of Geography, Professor Virginia McLaren. She was interested in seeing how alumni of the geography majors were using their undergrad background. And I kind of did research into what platforms alumni use the most and proposed some outreach strategies, and then kind of like naturally proposed a social media strategy because they were very focused on print to get information out. And it was interesting because I was able to kind of usher in a different type of method of getting information out to students. It was interesting because I was able to see the multiple paths that people had taken from my own degree. And it was a little bit of self-verification that what I was doing was, like, usable in the world.
Right. Please discuss some of the most significant changes in social media. As a professional, you obviously have a lot of experience understanding marketing, branding, mm-hmm. and the various roles and the impact of social media. What changes do you think overall should be implemented in order to perhaps further assist in the advancement of technology in social media?
I think one of the biggest changes that has come out of the rise of social media in, say, the past 5 years has been the immediacy with which information can now be disseminated. And from a international news, politics, international relations perspective, social media has become a powerful tool to make people aware of certain things. You can educate people about things that are happening in their communities. You can send out public warnings in case there is a threat, natural or otherwise. You can also control the way people read the news, because most people read the news on mobile now. So it's also changed the way people have had to copy edit news traditionally from a publishing sense, because everything has become more concise. So it's kind of molded inadvertently the way people write the news, because it's supposed to be more concise. And I think that's the biggest change, is that the way people write the news has become more shorter now.
For those interested in perhaps pursuing a career in journalism, those who are perhaps establishing a career, would you suggest that someone like that have a Twitter, Facebook, YouTube account?
Absolutely. I feel like especially if you want to go into journalism, you have to have an online footprint. And Twitter is great. Facebook is great. They're great ways to basically add to your digital persona, I guess. And they're also just great ways to share the thoughts that you can't put in articles. And they're also an interesting way to feel, to get connected to people in the world that you would not have a chance to connect to in person.
In addition, when using social media such as Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, mm-hmm. what are some of the best tips you would advise someone who perhaps is interested in using those tools more? However, not everyone has experience
yep.
using these various sources
yep.
professionally. So as a professional, what are a few tips that you'd be able to give the listeners today?
Well, I feel like it definitely takes some people time to find their tone on social media, the type of writing style they want to do. Do they want to be more informal? Do they want to be more formal? Do they want to focus on only writing about a specific type of thing? The key thing is to just like know the audience that you are writing for. I kind of like summarize Twitter as if you're texting the world.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that like everything that you write, everybody in the world can read it. So it has to, of course, be professional and not too controversial in the sense that you're always baiting people. But of course, discourse is great. And some of the best practices, I think, from a business perspective is to just know your audience and always and kind of join in on the conversation. And then always track what is doing well and what isn't doing well, and use your analytics, because you can get such a large amount of data that tells you where you're being successful and where you're not. And I honestly feel like if anyone's going to start on social media, they should learn how to write engaging content and track their content at the same time. Because a lot of people will write and then learn how to track it later. And if you're starting out, you might as well start up doing both, because then you'll just...
And I think it's useful feedback to be able to obtain those analytics,
yep.
because you might produce work, but unless you know if that work is being viewed or listened by people, you will never know the progress. It's also a useful way of seeing what topics are more interesting than others, and what your viewers and your listeners may want to see and hear.
Yeah.
In addition to all of the work you've previously done, you also were a research intern at the City of Toronto Business Improvement Office for the neighborhood of Chinatown. Some of your duties consisted of working with city officials and writing grant proposals. Please discuss some of the most rewarding and challenging experiences you faced during that internship.
Well, my internship was a part of my graduating course from the Urban Studies program at U of T. I basically worked on an executive report for them on the need for culturally accessible public space, and I basically worked on kind of justifying, from a urban development point of view, more spaces in the city that kind of not just exclusively cater to, but acknowledge the fact that the city was so multicultural and diverse. The report was also written in a way that it was like an antithesis to public spaces that are now very cold and not inviting. And this report was meant to be a perspective that if you create warm spaces that acknowledge the different ethnic mix-ups in communities, that then everybody can come in and automatically be included and feel like that space is theirs.
What advice would you be able to provide someone who is perhaps considering a similar internship, but is concerned as to whether he or she might have the necessary skills to succeed?
I feel like the beauty of an internship is that when you are talking to your future boss, they know that you won't have some of the skills, and that's why you want to intern for them. I don't feel like feeling as if that you don't have the skills should never be something that holds you back. That's why you want to work, and because you want to learn them. I definitely feel like you have to, if you don't possess maybe like some of like the core skills, then you just have to maybe be a little bit more strategic and have like other experience that you are able to leverage. But with regards to interning with the city, I feel like my biggest piece of advice would be to go and introduce yourself to the person who you want to work with. Because a lot of the times you will send an application and you will be one of thousands. And it's always great to tell the person who you want to work for to meet you, because they're going to be spending a lot of time with you and they want to make sure that you're able to collaborate successfully.
Right. And it also shows that you took the initiative and the time out of your day to make an effort to see that person. Therefore, you must be interested in the position enough that you care to actually go to the office to speak with that specific individual. In terms of your education, you were also the vice president of both the Toronto Undergraduate Geography Society as well as the Urban Studies Student Union. These roles made you a representative of over 800 students. What do you think are some of the most significant skills required in order to succeed as a leader?
I believe the number one skill I think required to be a successful leader is patience. You have to always, especially because I was representing a lot of different people who came from different backgrounds, had different situations, mature students, young students. My main thing was that when I was talking in committee meetings, that I wanted to always voice an overarching concern that would perhaps be the best for everyone. And the way I did that was just doing like office hours, always being available to talk, to voice concerns, because one of the I guess the drawbacks of being in a bigger program at U of T is that you do feel like a number. And even then, like, I was a one person who had to represent 800 people. So that was quite a ratio, and I definitely felt like just being patient and just being like a little understanding. And a lot of the times students just want someone to vent to, and because you're in a similar situation and you may be in the same age as them, you're an easier person to vent to than, say, a professor or like someone that they're learning from. So patience is my number one. And also, you just have to sometimes step back. You have to, I guess, also know when to step back and when to step forward when being a leader. You have to take note of what type of personalities you're dealing with, and then just kind of move on from there. But yeah, no, patience would be my number one.
I can say that 800 students to represent is certainly a lot of people.
Yeah.
Momin, where do you see yourself in the future?
I want to work, hopefully for the next 2 or 3 years, in corporate communications and communication strategy. After that, I hope to do my master's in innovation strategy or either an MBA. Not quite sure at the moment. I'm hoping that the more I work, the more I'll be able to narrow that down. In like 5 years, I hope to be kind of situated in a firm that has a clear like ladder that you can climb up, and maybe in a firm that's a that has a global presence, because I like the idea of having a job where I can float between offices and work on different projects. Don't know where though, but
It will happen.
I'm hoping I find that out in the next couple of years. Yeah.
Moment, what would you say is the best advice you'd be able to provide the students interested in perhaps pursuing a career in international relations and affairs? And at the same time, what is the best advice you'd be able to provide those interested in interning here at the NATO Association of Canada?
For people interested in a career in international relations, my, I guess, number one advice would be to be well-read and to be on top of all the topics that are being discussed globally. And also to, I feel like if you are able to be outgoing in your networking approach, that really helps you from an international relations perspective, because you're always going to be meeting people. And also attending conferences, going to roundtables, meeting as many people as possible, because international relations is a gigantic field. And I feel like you need to figure out where your niche is going to be in order to be successful in it, and in order to have like a really great experience out of it.
Definitely. Momin, thank you so much for providing all of the students and the listeners today with valuable advice. I have to say, I greatly appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure working with you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.